I'm here today with Mark Ellis. He is a YouTube creator, but he's also somebody who caught my attention because we were competing in the SERPs. I was like, who is this guy? And so I had to talk to him. So welcome, Mark.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, we're kind of unknown competitors, aren't we? It's always the same.
I guess. Competitor is kind of a strong word, but yeah. I mean, we are producing similar content and fighting for visibility in the SERP. So I guess we are competitors in that sense. But
I think you're right.
I'm not trying that hard.
No, thanks for having me on, John. It's brilliant. Really, really good to chat.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious to know, as I'm sure people listening are too, what your background is. What got you into becoming a YouTube creator? Because I think you've been one with Mark Ellis Reviews. You've been doing that for about 2, maybe going on 3 years. And how does somebody get into that? What were you doing before to be like, today I'm waking up and I'm going to review things on YouTube, and that's going to be what I do for a living. Like, how does that happen?
That's pretty much how it started. Apart from the whole for a living thing, that came a bit later on. But
okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's been just over 3 years now, because I started in 2020. So a bit like a lot of people, I think I joined quite a few people in March 2020 when the lockdown kicked off, and you know, you had the choice of starting a YouTube channel or, you know, making banana bread for a living. And I decided to do the former. I was still working at that point.
Because you're bad at making banana bread?
My girlfriend does that. She's an amazing chef.
All right.
So I leave that to her. But I think it was at that time when, you know, people had a bit more time on their hands. I was quite lucky. I was still working at that point. So I had my own kind of external marketing, kind of freelancing thing going on, which I'd been doing for a few years. So that was still going okay. And I just had this desire to do something, and I've made content and done stuff like this for a long, long time, always for fun or just as a hobby or as a side hustle type thing, as they always say. I've always had this desire to do something at some stage, and I've tried things here and there that I just haven't stuck with. But yeah, in 2020, I just thought, I literally, as you've just kind of described it, I turned to my girlfriend in the back garden one day and said, I'm going to start this YouTube channel. I'm just going to go for it. And I did. And within, like I say, within 3 years, I've gone past 100,000 subs. I'm getting anywhere between 800,000 to a million viewers a month. And it's my full-time thing. I've kind of dumped everything else and gone all in with it. And there's obviously a lot more to that, which obviously I'm sure we'll cover. But it's, yeah, it was literally a case of just going for it and but really going for it. It's probably worth also mentioning that I'm a big fan of YouTube, and I have been for many, many years. So leading up to this, you know, I was a YouTube viewer, and I've got my list of favorite YouTubers that I always tune into. So I'm a big nerd when it comes to YouTube anyway. So I'd been studying it, not necessarily with the idea of doing it myself all the time, but studying it just because I found it interesting, really. So that was literally it. I jumped in and went for it.
So it was sort of like personal interest and like a passion, something where you always use this thing and you really like it and you really admire sort of what other creators are making, and it's just sort of like, I could be doing this, I want to be doing this, and that's what it kind of, how it happened,
pretty much. Yeah, that's exactly it. And like I said, I admired these people massively. And I think although I didn't know exactly how much hard work was involved, I took a very good guess. I think a lot of people look at what we do and think that looks quite straightforward or just a lot of fun. And don't get me wrong, it's loads of fun and I wouldn't swap it for the world, but it's also the hardest job I've ever had in my life. The most stressful job. It gives you more worries about stuff than I've ever had in my other businesses and my other careers and things. It's nothing like you expect at all, like so many things in life, I suppose. But yeah, it was just this deep admiration for people that were doing it and being successful. And also because I'd built a whole bunch of what seemed like sort of disparate skills over the years in terms of videography, audio production, presenting skills, all that sort of stuff. And they all kind of came together in, like I say, it wasn't planned like that at all, but having spent, you know, I'm 42 now, I've spent a long time relatively in work, and I've kind of built those skills up over that time. And I think, like Steve Jobs said, you can't join the dots up looking forward, but when you look back, you can see how they all lined up and how you followed that path, basically.
Yeah, that's, I think that feels really good. I mean, to be able to, you know, you go through life and you're doing these, like you were saying, disparate type of things, and to be able to get to a place where you can combine them all into something that you enjoy, that other people can enjoy, feels good. I mean, that's a nice place to be, I would say, just like career wise and stuff. So that sounds great. I do know from making plenty of videos over the years that it is not easy. It's not easy to make it look good. You can immediately see people who didn't take the time to put something together, because it's jarring. And when you make something that is entertaining, transition smoothly, you know, all those things, at least I know somebody put time into that. That there's a lot of thought and time and serious editing and probably many takes to be able to present something that is so enjoyable for others, you know, to watch and experience. So I feel you. In fact, that's why I don't have a YouTube channel. Because I'm older than you, and maybe I have the skills, maybe, to do something like that, but I'm too tired.
I think you understand it. So I think if you did,
I do understand it.
You wouldn't be surprised. You wouldn't be surprised by how hard it is. I think some people are, but
it's funny because I mean, it's. I admire it. I mean, when I see you and I see others, I'm not like a huge YouTube video consumer, like particularly like my kids are. But you know, a lot of the, you know, the people that I do watch. And the people who have gotten to a place where you are, or even bigger, it's because of the quality. It's because of the time that they put into it, and you know, just the thought and the care really is what it comes down to. Yeah. So I completely respect that. The other thing I respect about what you're doing is your SEO game. My background is, I too have dabbled in many things, but I would, if I had to put a label on myself, it would be like, you're an SEO person. I'm an SEO person. I mean, and so I will occasionally, when I feel like it, it's we're talking like 6 to 12 months apart, we'll write a review of something just because I want to. I have a whole list of things I want to review, but it takes me a while to get to one of them. And so I recently wrote a review about Remarkable 2. Which is this paper like tablet that uses e-ink that I love. And I've used it since the first version, since they did their Kickstarter like thing, to be able to launch their first version. And so I spent a lot of time on it, a lot of care and love, just like you do with your videos and your, you know, website reviews and stuff. And then of course, like the obsessive SEO that I am, I start manually checking out like, where am I here? Like, I'm just curious to know, like, it usually takes time, for me to like bubble up, after I publish something new, but where am I? And then you were like number 2 or 3 or something like that. And I'm like, who's this Mark Ellis Yahoo who's on here, you know, between the CNETs and the Tom's Hardware and, you know, all the ones that kind of dominate reviews right now, the main publishers. And actually, you know, in an admirational way, you know, I was just like, I got to see what this guy's up to. Like, this is good. I like that this person is sort of like playing a similar game that I am. Cause I have things where I think my review site maybe has 6 or 7 reviews total. I mean, it's pathetic. And it even uses a domain that most people who are like traditional .comers would be like, you're an idiot. That sucks. It's like, cause I use like .reviews. So it's quote .reviews. But I mean, I have stuff that ranks incredibly well. I mean, like for the very few things I've done, I don't do any link building. I'm just a full on technical, write it the right way type of person. And I'm trying to think of the ones that I rank the best for. Like, I think it's Level Bolt Review, Memberful Review, Fathom Analytics Review, and maybe a couple others where, like, I'm first, second, or third. I mean, always have been. And it's one of those things where, like, I know you can do it. You just rarely see other people doing it. I mean, and you may not know this, but you are rare amongst the people who are just individuals and don't have a publishing, you know, company that are able to actually show up and be there. So anyways, that's a really long-winded say that caught my attention, and I admire you for your game. For how well you're doing.
I appreciate that, John. Thank you. Coming from you, that does mean a lot. Absolutely.
So how did you do it? No.
Well, no, absolutely no problem sharing my secrets, because I kind of had to sort of chuckle to myself when you said my SEO game, because I haven't really got one, if I'm honest. I mean, I've got a kind of the semblance of an SEO game, but I'm not, you know, you are far more, you know, stratospherically more skilled at SEO than I am. I've got obviously a background in marketing, so I know what SEO is. I've worked with a lot of SEO people, and I get the absolute basics of it. I'm not a technical SEO person at all. Like you, I don't do link building, but I understand decent titles. I have to, because that's my job. My entire business is built around good titles, whether it be a YouTube video or a blog post or even a tweet, etc. It's that above the fold thing has to be right. If I don't get that right, I don't have a business, because people don't click. So that is just bread and butter for me. And it just so happens to tie in with SEO, that the whole principle of SEO. So I get that. I get meta descriptions. I get alt tag descriptions. But that's about it, really. I don't do that entire website. So the markellisreviews.com was built by me back in 2020. That the kind of footings for it are exactly the same. Dare I say it, I probably shouldn't say this publicly, but it runs on GoDaddy, which is a horrendous platform. That might be public at all. I can't stand
worst
them.
Ad for GoDaddy ever.
Yeah, well, they've had enough of that from me on Twitter, and they never respond, so I don't care. Right. But the website will disappear. If this goes public, you'll just vanish. But the point being, it still manages to pull in between 3,000 to 4,000 unique hits a day, which isn't huge in web terms, but for me, it's massive. And it's generating, as a result of that, good ad revenue. Yeah, the website is covered in ads, and that isn't the eventual strategy with it is not to have all those ads on there, because it's a fairly horrible user experience unless using an ad blocker. But the counter argument for that is that I do get some fairly decent ad revenue, so I'm not turning it off because I'm a business person.
Affiliate links and stuff like that too, right?
Links, yeah, exactly, yeah. But in terms of the secret for this, so that remarkable, it's a really good example, that remarkable review, because I genuinely can't remember publishing it on the site. The reason I can't remember publishing it is because
you were stone drunk and out of it, yeah, and blacked out, and really then you saw that point. It was published in the morning, or is that what happened?
Who did that? Yeah, wouldn't be far off the truth, to be honest. But you know, in terms of all of the pretty much everything you see on the site, well, not everything, but most of the things, most of the reviews that you see on the site, eventually become YouTube videos. So my production process is: come up with the idea, write the blog post, publish that blog post on markellisreviews.com, import it into Medium as well. I've got a big presence on Medium, 17,000 followers or something on there. So the exact same post goes on there. You get a canonical link back just to make sure all the SEO stuff's okay.
I was just about to ask you that, by the way. Yeah. I was like, what about the canonical link?
Yeah, well, Medium does that for you as well. It's a big misconception about Medium and Medium versus your own website. You can quite happily have the same article on both and earn revenue from the two. So it worked. I've done that for 3 years. It's no problem. So that's the process. And then once that's done, that blog post or the raw form of it gets turned into a very loose script for the web for the YouTube video. Shoot the YouTube video, publish it, done. So you've got from one idea, you've got 3 or 4 pieces of content, because you then get shorts and stuff from that as well. So it's all about content repurposing, which is something I'm absolutely obsessed with, and it comes from my marketing background, and everyone does it, John, as you know. You know, if people think content repurposing is a lie and a big hoax, not hoax, but a big kind of, you know, insult to people's intelligence.
No, I am a huge fan of repurposing. Yeah. I think that is absolutely the way to go and hit every channel.
Yeah, I think like my mum always says that there's only 7 songs, and it's true. And you know, Disney's a great example of content repurposing. Most of the action sequences you see in Disney films are just taken from old films and just repurposed. And I'm going way off topic, but the point being,
no, it's perfect for this. Anytime anybody talks with me, we go way off topic.
I'm sure. But the point being, I don't put a huge amount of thought into that blog post. So that remarkable review, I needed to review it for the YouTube channel, and it's done pretty well on the channel as well. I had no idea if it would. It was a brand new product I was reviewing. You never really know if people are going to kind of take an interest in it. But there's something about the remarkable that people are fascinated about, and it's got a very high search volume because of that. And I've basically, John, I've just done something with that article that has worked. So I've done something with the title. I've done something. I don't think there's a huge number of images in there. There's probably 3 or 4 or something. I've got the alt tags right, and more importantly, I think you kind of touched on this earlier, I've got the content right. I'm a writer first and foremost, so writing comes very naturally to me. It has for my entire life. So I know how to write, and I think I'm a good writer. So I think that kind of ties into it as well. So it's a mixture of luck, / knowing what I'm doing, / just getting on with that process and trusting it, really. And I've had the remarkable is one example of that. I've had another one which has been very popular, which is my iPad mini review. Another one which again I wrote completely off the cuff, didn't think anything of it really, which was about the iPhone 13 mini battery performance. That gets thousands of views every day. I didn't plan on that happening at all. Very simple article. No SEO really put into it apart from the things I mentioned. So it's a long way of saying, basically, I'm not an SEO expert at all. I've never paid a penny for anyone to do it for me. I'm not suggesting SEO is a waste of time, because it's not. I think it, depending on your goals, it's absolutely worth investing in. But it's not for me. What I'm doing works, really. So
I would say, based on what I've observed, you know, because obviously I looked at your site and looked at what you were doing, that you're like, you're the accidental SEO. Yeah. You're the person who didn't intentionally go out of the way to do anything like super technical or schemey, you know, or whatever. but it was one of those things where it's like, I guess the way I approach this just works, because certainly things like how you do your page title is actually a pretty strong signal. It's stronger than I would say most people even understand it to be. I mean, it's very strong. I know that from working in the publishing world. You know, we could come in and tweak something, and it would be the difference of whether it shows up or not, you know, above the fold. And so I even though those type of optimizations seem really basic to people, they're actually incredibly important. The other thing is, I think that you, including myself, likely have benefited from changes that Google has made around reviews just within the last year or two. I'm not sure that if you were doing the same thing before you started this, you'd be seeing the same performance. So one of the things that Google's done, I don't really have the exact time frame. I'll probably put it in the notes or whatever, but is they've really updated how they analyze reviews and surface them. And it's the reason why we're showing up. And I just know this because I've played around with this and test this a lot. And when they started making those changes, that's when my stuff started to appear. And I started to appear with the big sites. And I'm like, I don't know why I'm here. Like, because it was before they even announced it. And I was like, I have no idea why I'm showing up here. I wrote something. I wrote it from a very personal, you know, experience, you know, as far as the review goes, and just said, this is what I think it is. I did some of the things that you typically would see in a review, which is just like, you know, here's my rating. And I naturally added pros and cons because those kind of things made sense to me. If I were wanted to, you know, research something and was considering buying it, I wrote about the things that I would tell myself. I think that's what you've done with your content. I think your content is very similar. And one of the things with these series of updates that they've made is they're actually trying to surface our type of content. I mean, they're trying to surface from people who I'm saying this more as a joke, who aren't idiots. Yeah. And and have some bit of experience around a particular area. You know, they write about these type of things more often than not. And when they write about them, they use language in a way that is, that conveys, at least to, I guess you could say, software, personal use, personal recommendation, personal use, authentic the ideas around the thing, regarding, I really didn't like this when I used this, this is how I feel about whatever this is, you know, it's the eyes, it's the, you know, how I do that. And there are plenty of people who out there who try to mimic and copy that so they can rank or whatever. But I think their algorithm is just good enough that they can tie the writer as an entity, know how they write, with how they wrote the review, and all that kind of gets analyzed as sort of a complete package. And they're like, okay, this is definitely this person, which we think through our knowledge graph is related to these things. The tone and writing matches that. For you, I think there's probably a symbiosis with your YouTube channel. I'm sure that the algorithm knows the relationship between you and your site and what you're doing, even how you're saying stuff, with what you are publishing in your YouTube channel, and the fact that you're an entity over there and you have all these engagement metrics. And I have no doubt that in some form or fashion, those things are tied together, and that is sort of what helps you lift you. And for me, it's the stuff I've done up to the point of writing that review. It knows me and the things I've done throughout my career, that at least are published online. And so, I love that. I love that, you, and I can do that, that we could actually compete. And if you and I can do that, then other people can do that. It's actually a more fair game than people maybe give Google credit for. It's just that nobody knows how to do it other than to cheat their way to it.
Yeah, because that's what you know, not what you're taught, but it's what you're led to believe, that SEO is this kind of dark art where you need to know this, that, and the other. And you know, I think the impression I used to have of SEO a long time ago was that it was always a bunch of people who were smart enough and had enough time to invest in researching it, and were always trying to stay one step ahead of Google. So first it was stuffing links at the bottom of the page, and then all this stuff. And then Google would kind of catch up with them and say, oh, you're not doing that anymore. And then they'd move on to something else, another trick they could do. That's always, I think some people still think that's the case with SEO. And I think the way you've just described it is perfect, really. And I think Google is a lot smarter than that. It used to be like that, absolutely. But as you know, the favorite phrase of the day, AI has developed. All AI has been doing this stuff behind the scenes for ages. I think one of the things which kind of reminded me of this probably a couple of years ago now is when I was listening to another podcast, someone talking about YouTube, and they were saying, you have to remember that YouTube, you don't really need to worry about tags. You worry about your thumbnail and the title, etc. That's really important. But in terms of the rest of what needs to happen with the algorithm, YouTube isn't just looking at the written stuff in your description. It's watching the video. It knows what's in the video. It's not someone sitting there watching it. It's YouTube watching the video. It can pick out the people that are in it. I think the point you've just made about the link between my YouTube channel and my website is absolutely spot on. Because what I do, that process of going from blog to video, once the video is published, I then insert the video embed into the article. Mm-hmm. So like you say, I mean, we can't prove this, but there's a very good chance that YouTube knows that, or sorry, Google knows that the guy in that video is the same guy who's running this site and talking, because he talks the same. A lot of the content is identical, actually, because it's pretty much a video version of the blog. And all it's taken me to get to that point is just hard work and doing what I know how to do it. And more importantly, creating content that's for my audience. And Google wants to serve the audience with content they like, because if it does that, they'll come back. It's not rocket science at all. It's really absolutely simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's I could spend an hour, which we're not, don't worry, talking about like thank God. talking about the importance of engagement and engagement metrics, and then another piece that you mentioned, which I would call almost like breadcrumbs in a sense, not in the navigational sense, but breadcrumbs in the sense of, on your YouTube channel, you link to your domain. So it knows, you know, yep. that those things are associated. So, I mean, you're giving hints might be a better word for it actually. So I want to focus on your site, because the way you're approaching it is actually really interesting and makes a huge amount of sense to me, particularly from a creator standpoint, which is you write the content, you create that content, you know, in written form, which then steers you towards what the video is going to be. And then you create the video and then you, you know, combine them together. You make a relationship between the two. That makes a ton of sense, because anybody who's done any type of video creation well knows that it starts on paper. You don't just start like recording and rambling. I mean, you can
try.
Good luck. Maybe TikTok's for you. I don't know. that's funny, actually. So I've always had the impression that a lot of video creators, particularly video creators that focus solely on something like YouTube or even TikTok, that's just all they do. And a lot of times you don't really see a presence, you know, off that centralized platform that's controlled by somebody else. And so, you know, as somebody who is very SEO-y and open webby, you know, I'm a big proponent of control your destiny, control your own presence online, and to be able, because then it's like, if you ever get cut off or shut out, or, you know, even if it's a false positive on the platform's side, you know, you lose that. Even if it's temporarily, you lose it. And because you don't ultimately have control over it, you're not making the rules there. And so I big proponent for having your own presence, your own web presence that you control. And so I don't think a lot of video creators approach it that way. I think a lot of times they might do it after the fact, like, oh, this is getting big, this is my thing, I'm thinking of branching out. I'm thinking of, like, are there other ways I can make money? Are there other ways I could even promote, vice versa? Kind of what you're doing with reviews first and then pointing over to your YouTube channel. So I'm curious to know, what have you been able to do with your website? What does your website provide you that your YouTube channel doesn't?
It's a really good question, because they're so closely linked. They're very similar in terms of what they offer. I think probably the biggest thing is that they do generate a completely different audience. When I say different, it's obviously it's the same people. It's tech people who, so my kind of target viewer or reader is someone who loves tech but has no interest in benchmarks. That's what I've always kind of gone for, because that's me basically. So although they share that same person, that same persona, as we'd say in marketing, it's literally a different audience. You know, the people who find me on Google, find my website, may never check me out on YouTube, which is fine, because what they might do is read the blog or the article or the opinion piece on the website, and then spot that I've got a newsletter, which they might join. And generally speaking, that the website is the biggest source of new newsletter subscribers, basically. That most of them come from the website through the pop-up form and all that sort of stuff. So that's really where the gold dust lies, like you say. If you want to be in control of your own destiny as a creator, which you should be, because it's probably not going to happen, but YouTube could disappear tomorrow. It could, or more importantly, more realistically, they could do something which completely changes the way your channel performs, the way your,
yeah, how you can monetize and stuff, which has happened exactly. Before. Mm-hmm.
And they've done this no end of times. I mean, it's worth, if you ever want to get into this business, it's worth reading some of the histories of YouTube, which are fascinating anyway. But they tell these tales of when you had these really big creators doing fantastically well, and then YouTube makes a decision, a big kind of strategic decision, which changes the algorithm, and those creators just disappear. And these people had millions of followers, and they had to adapt, and then they lost their audience, all that sort of stuff. So that illustrates how much of a kind of tightrope you're walking on with that. Whereas if you've got a website which is pulling in a lot of views, but also it's converting some of those views into people who will actually happily give you their email address, it's those people that you can, it's that audience that you control, because no one can take that away from you. If you have 1,000 email addresses that have been given to you by the people that have come to your website, which is a big deal, you know, people giving you their email address is a single point of contact. It's a single route into their life, which you don't get on YouTube, you don't get on TikTok, you don't even get on the web. Email is absolutely key for that. But if you've got that happening, and you've got, like I say, you've got, just for argument's sake, 1,000 people on that list, no one can delete that for you. It's yours. You can take it, you can put it into different email marketing platforms. It doesn't really matter what you do with it. You own it. And that's that. And if everything went south tomorrow, if YouTube disappeared and Medium went and TikTok went and if all those other platforms disappeared, I'd still have, I think it's around about 2,500 people on my mailing list, which is a very highly engaged audience. So it wouldn't be a great day. Don't get me wrong.
There would be some crying, but.
Definitely a few tears. But I'd then think, right, I'd gather myself and think, okay, what do I do now? Okay, I've got that. I've still got my newsletter. And every week, John, I send out a video newsletter a bit like this to those people. And each one gets about, on average, between 250 to 300 views or something like that, which doesn't sound like many, but they are really super engaged views, get loads of comments. They've been watching the newsletter for 3 years, and it's by far the most enjoyable video that I make, weirdly. So I'd still be doing that. And that just illustrates that, like you say, controlling your own destiny, the website, it plays a central role in that completely.
It's really interesting because you said that your audience on YouTube is different from your audience on your website. Surely there's probably some crossover, you know, there's some people who sort of do a little bit of both. But I think that's an important sort of distinction to make, because I often think of sending people from YouTube over to the website, but in this case, it's more of a, going back to your comments around repurposing, you know, it's more of a, people consume things in different ways. And the reason why you want to repurpose content through a different channel, through a different method, is because that may be the only way to capture this other audience that also might be interested in the content you're creating. And so what I'm hearing from you is at least a probably an educated assumption on your part, is that there's the group of people who prefer to only consume on YouTube, and there's a group of people who prefer to consume via written word, via even an embedded video, via an email I might send them that then sends them back maybe to my site, sometimes to YouTube maybe to watch something. But those are, even though there might be some crossover, those are kind of unique audiences. Does that sound right?
Completely, yeah, absolutely. And I think that the whole point, is, as you've just demonstrated, is that someone who likes watching videos may not have the time or even be bothered about sitting down and reading 1,200 words. They'd much rather sit there and watch an eight-minute video, and vice versa. You know, I do see people say in the comments of my of the blogs that I write, I don't watch YouTube, which is why I enjoy reading this kind of article. And when I see that, I think, oh wow, yeah, that's why. it sounds obvious until you see someone actually say it. Someone within that audience saying, I don't watch YouTube. I've got a Google account. I just browse the web. And similarly, like I say, there'll be people in comment sections of my videos who say, I just want to watch the video. I'm not bothered about the written content. And I think there can be that temptation to try and send people between the two different platforms. And you shouldn't. It's not really worth even trying, because you might be sending them somewhere where they don't want to be, really. It's much better to let it happen naturally and let those two audiences figure themselves out. I mean, there is crossover, like you say. There's definitely a bit of crossover between the two. But I think, you know, the bulk of the audiences are pretty different people, really.
Yeah. So that it's fascinating to me, because I was making different assumptions. I was assuming that the audience from YouTube was being pushed over to your web presence. But it doesn't sound like, at least from your observations, and you're the one kind of monitoring everything, that's actually what's happening. Instead, you're developing two different audiences for the same content through a different medium. And for you, though, the difference between your site, your newsletter, even publishing to Medium, compared to YouTube is that I think we would agree that you, at the end of the day, you still have more control over that than you do over YouTube. Like, you want YouTube to keep going. You don't want to screw anything up, and you want to keep having the revenue that comes from that, and even the brand awareness. But I personally would say there's more comfort knowing that you still have an audience that you still have, for the most part, complete control over.
Yeah.
I mean, if worst case scenario ever happened.
Yeah, completely. I think also it's intentional to keep people, for instance, on YouTube. You have to. That's why at the end of my video, the call to action is watch this next video. It's always the same thing. I very, very rarely say, go here, go to my website to read this blog post. I have that stuff, obviously, in the description. There is a link to the website in there, which is more, like you've mentioned earlier, more for SEO purposes, really. But I never purposefully try and send people to my website from a YouTube video, because one, firstly, you lose them at that point, and two, YouTube loses them, and YouTube doesn't want that. YouTube wants.
I'm fully aware of that. Yes,
to keep longer.
It is the model.
But some people aren't, though. I think again, some people who get into this think, oh, it'd be great, I can have a YouTube channel. I can kind of keep pushing my digital products and things on my website. As soon as you start doing that, your videos aren't going to perform, because YouTube wants those viewers to watch that video and then that, and be on there for hours. That's what they're after, basically.
Do you think that there's a scenario where you could make your own website, your own presence, make more money, it'd be more worth your time than being on YouTube? And what I mean by that is that you could find a way to monetize on your own site, your own videos, say your own courses. It could be walled, you know, type thing, or, you know, a membership based thing where you build up enough of an audience over there, even over there, but on YouTube, but on your site, that it could be membership based, and the really meaty stuff and the videos that you make are things that people have to pay for access to. And then YouTube becomes more of a brand exercise. You know, there's snippets, teasers, clips, whatever. I'm thinking of one company in particular who has done what I'm describing, and they mainly use YouTube now for industry news around what they do and things like that. So it like maintains sort of this viewership and brand, but it ultimately points back over to this other thing, which is their site, which they monetize there, and you have to pay to get access to. Is there a scenario that makes sense to you there, or maybe not, because of the type of content you create today?
It's not so much because of the type of content. I think that it's a really fascinating question. It's something that not a lot of people talk about, really, because there is the elephant in the room is YouTube. It's the fact that YouTube exists. And for as long as YouTube exists, it's quite a hard thing to get your head around, because why would you leave that ready-made audience on the table plus the partner program? It's all there. And obviously YouTube has the technical prowess. You don't have to worry about your video, you know, maxing out bandwidth and stuff. All of that stuff is just taken care for you, and it's free. You know, you just upload it and away it goes. So for as long as YouTube offers that service, which I think is amazing, I think not enough is said about how incredible a platform YouTube is for creators like me. I haven't paid anything to YouTube ever, but they've paid me thousands and thousands because I keep publishing stuff on their site. It's very rare you find sites like that. Medium is probably the only other one that is very close to it, actually, in terms of the way it kind of looks after its writers. But so for as long as YouTube's there, it's very hard to think of a world where you would be running the ship yourself. I mean, it would be amazing to be able to do that, to have your own site, which I do have, but having everything encapsulated within there without worrying about YouTube and basically just living off the fact that people are going to find it on Google or for whatever, however, whichever way they come through, via a membership system or something like that. But it does bring with it its own challenges, because it brings with it the hosting challenge. You know, I know there's plenty of other platforms there, as you know, to host videos and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So you can get around that. That's no problem at all. But you've still got to, like I say, it's a very hard thing as a YouTube creator to try and get your head around how that would work. But I completely understand how it would be quite an exciting reality if it ever came to it. It would change everything, though, wouldn't it, John? I mean, it would change the whole publishing industry. It would change overnight. And again, even the big guys, the ones that, like you said, we are actually competing against with certain articles, the Tech Crunches and the Mac Rumors, etc. They still rely on YouTube for their videos. They don't host stuff themselves.
Absolutely,
which says it all.
At the end of the day, everybody seems to rely on it. It is, it's the largest video search engine. I mean,
the only exception to the rule, the only exception to that rule over here really is the BBC. So the BBC has a colossal website, a colossal web presence, very technically proficient, and all of their video, I think, is self-hosted. I believe. I mean, it's obviously on CDNs and stuff, but it's mm-hmm. It's not YouTube. They don't send you off to YouTube like a lot of the news outlets. So the BBC model is kind of what you're talking about. I can't really compare myself to the BBC, obviously, but that gives you an example of where they do have complete control over their audience. No, they're not relying on anyone else apart from.
But for that, it comes down to the brand awareness. I mean, yeah. they're such a ubiquitous brand, over there that it's not a there's no hurdle to get people to go there. I mean, they go there. It's direct traffic, I'm sure.
But then you could argue that scales down. So someone like Marques Brownlee, MKBHD, I don't know if you're familiar with him. One of the biggest tech YouTubers. I think he's barely 30 years old, which is frustrating, but he's incredible. He's a big inspiration for me. And he has built his own mini empire. He's got 15, 16 million subscribers on YouTube. You could picture a world where, because he is so he's got such a big audience and such a loyal audience, he probably could, if he wanted to, come off YouTube, take that audience with him and have just his own BBC-like empire. It'd be quite a big undertaking. There's Linus Tech Tip, Linus Media Group. That's a similar one where you could think, well, possibly they could do their own thing. I know they're experimenting with stuff like that as well. So those guys have got deeper pockets than someone like me, but it does scale down. It's the 1,000 true fans thing, isn't it? Where if you can get 1,000 people who are really into you and really engaged and willing to give you some money every month, then who's to say it couldn't be a reality?
Right. That's where my head is. It's around, I'm just going to make it up as far as a scenario for you. but if there was, it's one of those things where you focus literally on reviews. it's in the name. It's in the domain.
Yep.
And if there was something that you felt really highly competent about, and something that you think truly had just monetary value, where you would be coaching or teaching or whatever. I'm not saying you want to do this. I'm not saying I want to do this. But if there was that thing, then it's like you could do that. And the reason why you might want to do that is because I'm just making up numbers here, but so let's say you make $1,000 off a month off YouTube. Well, the membership or selling access to courses could be thousands of dollars a month. And in that case, it would make sense, at least, on paper, to spend time working on that than over here, when you know how hard it was to get to a certain point to even be making $1,000 a month on YouTube, with the amount of effort that goes into that. And so that's a scenario where I could see where I might want to focus more on my own stuff and use YouTube as, again, more of a branding exercise and awareness exercise,
funny enough,
post different things.
Yeah, sorry to jump in, John. Funny enough, I am doing that already. So I've got another brand, which is Solo Club, which I started about 2 or 3 months ago. And that's the name plays on solopreneur. It's that kind of thing. But that is about me kind of educating people on this stuff. It's kind of talking about content creation and running your own business. So that's got a separate YouTube channel. It's only got about 1,100 followers on there at the moment, but it's growing quite nicely. But that's based on doing live streams, courses like you mentioned, selling digital products. And I'm less worried about the size of the audience on that channel. I want it to be highly engaged, but whereas the reviews audience is just about getting as big as possible to get that audience way beyond, hopefully hit a million at some point. With Solo Club, it's not quite like that, for the reason that you just mentioned. It's more about having, even if it's just 5,000 subs on that YouTube channel, if that brings through enough subscriptions to courses or ebook sales or whatever, it's massively profitable. I'm still relying on YouTube at that point, and it's early days, obviously, but I could foresee a future maybe with that thing where YouTube is a smaller part of it, possibly.
It's funny. I actually remember seeing that when I was researching you, and I just forgot about it. I'm glad you brought it up at the end. That is exactly what I'm talking about. Which is sort of like a different angle and how you might approach YouTube differently and then control more of your destiny on that side. And it sounds like that's what you're attempting to do, just starting out with the solopreneur type of approach.
Yeah, it's experimental as well. I can afford the time I can afford the experimentation with it, really, because the review side of the business is what drives and brings in the money. So yeah, right. Solo Club is a bit of an experiment, but it's very serious. I've got big plans for it, but it's nice to have that. It's nice to have this thing that I'm kind of playing around with and seeing how it works and seeing how the audience reacts and all that sort of stuff.
I love it. I totally resonate with that. I mean, you know, you have your thing. And then you get without as much pressure, be able to play around with the other thing to see if it'll work and then perfect it over time. I will not be surprised if we talk a couple years from now and that ends up being more of your thing. Successful you've been with the reviews side of things. So, hey, it was really great to talk with you. Super interesting to hear about your journey and how you're approaching both YouTube and your site and Medium and your newsletter. I think there are a lot of things that you shared that are, I just think are going to be insightful and helpful to people who are watching or listening to this. So I really appreciate your time. Yeah.
No, I hope it helps, but yeah, no, thanks, John. Really, really, really appreciate the time. It's been great.